evening and welcome back to Transatlantic History Ramblings with Lauren and Brian. This is Brian in Buffalo, US of A, and with me as always
is Lauren from Swansea. How are you, Brian?
I'm good, preparing for the big eclipse. You know about the eclipse, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Did you know that the best place in the entire world to see the eclipse is Buffalo, New York?
Do you have any merchandise to say that?
Tons of it. And they've already declared Buffalo and Niagara Falls will be states of emergency on the day of the eclipse. They're expecting over 1 million tourists in Buffalo and over 1 million tourists in Niagara Falls on that day. Hotel rooms in downtown Buffalo that usually average about $100 a night are between $900 and $1,500 a night for the eclipse.
That's because they're going to have to get extra staff in.
And you know what I'm doing for it?
Sleeping? Nothing. Working?
Nothing. I'm working, yeah. Yeah, that's my big plan. I'm not leaving my house. Well, apartment. I don't live in a house, Lauren. I live in an apartment. But I'm not leaving the apartment because it's going to be a fucking madhouse. And you know, if I want to see the eclipse, I can go, like, just outside and see it. I don't have to do anything special. You want some eclipse shit?
No, not actual shit.
Like, I went to Buffalo and all I got was the stinking eclipse t-shirt or something?
That would be amazing. But talking about natural phenomena, it was quite wonderful last week because, as you know, last week was Holy Week. And I was busy running around and at church every day from Palm Sunday to Easter Sunday. The vicar is terribly fed up of me.
Yes.
And we had on the Wednesday before Maundy Thursday, we have an agape supper, which is because we're a parish of two churches. The two churches come together. We all bring, it's a potluck dinner, and we sit there and we sing songs and we have a nice night. And then Brian, at midnight that night, going into Maundy Thursday, it snowed. How wonderful was that?
Ooh,
it snowed.
You broke up for a second. What happened at midnight? That's not wonderful.
It snowed.
No, that's not wonderful.
It was wonderful. It was. It was magical. It was biblical. And it reminded me of that bit about how in Job, how snow was used to show God's magnificence, and it was just amazing that that would happen after lots of churches in Wales, in Swansea especially, would be having their agape suppers on the Wednesday, and then we had snow. It didn't stick or anything
because it rained a ton. There was snow in here. Yeah.
No, it was brilliant. So yeah, and also. I got my license to serve at communion as well, so I did that twice over Easter as well. I was so tempted.
And again, did you give anybody seconds?
No, I didn't.
Do you give them the cookies or the wine?
I do not give them the wafers. I give them the wine. I give them the blood of Christ.
Remember when I found out that the wafers have no calories and no carbs? And I can order them in bulk online.
Yeah, I remember you sent me the links to Amazon for that as well.
Yeah, I'm thinking of buying some because baseball season has started and there would be nothing better than sitting in my easy chair, eating the body of Christ, watching the Yankees games.
Aww.
Think it's a good idea?
No.
Oh, well. I do want to read an email before we go any further that we got from a listener.
Okay.
And Lauren, this email simply says, "Dear Lauren and Brian, does Lauren really have a sheep in her living room while you're recording?" Yep, there it is. So, yeah. Yes, we do.
No,
well, we
I think,
she does have a sheep in her living room. Everyone in Wales does.
No, stop telling me. No, we do not. I used to have three Bichons, Jasper, Belle, and they looked like sheep, but they were dogs. But I don't have sheep in my living room.
But you see, in Wales, whenever you get property, you automatically get a sheep and a hedgehog house. Don't you have a hedgehog house?
I do, but we need a new one.
Yeah.
We did have a hedgehog living in it. But then he moved into the garage. And then he had to be rescued from the garage because we were having the garage demolished.
Did you say you need an ooh one?
We need a new one. But the hedgehog is still very much in our garden, and the reason we know that is because there are no slugs in our garden anymore. So yay, hedgehog.
Yay, hedgehog. That might be the Easter egg, by the way, Lauren.
What?
The yay, hedgehog? Because it's not something you hear every day. Unlike sheep and whales. So, I don't, people do not.
Actually, I will say one thing, though. I will say one thing, and I didn't publicize it on the podcast. The museum where I work, in March, we have lamb cam. And I did see some lambs being born on lamb cam. And I was quite naughty because I did watch it during working hours. But then I thought it's in my actual place of work that was putting it on, so I had to watch it during my lunch hour.
Yeah, it's kind of your job. I mean, you keep that one in your living room.
I do not have sheep in my living room, you horrible child.
We have a lot of listeners who are not members of our Facebook group. Speaking of which, if you want to become a member of our Facebook group, Lauren, what's the Facebook site?
History Ramblings.
Yep. And you just send us a link. You try to join. You'll get a couple quick questions. Then it'll come to us and, you know, we'll either sell you to fuck off or we'll let you in. Also, you could follow us on Instagram at TA History or Twitter or X or whatever it's called, or Threads at TA History. You can email us at trans.history.ramblings@gmail.com. I think we have a TikTok, but that's going to be banned in the U.S. soon, so I don't know if you should use that. But
I've seen TikTok be because I was getting a lot of pervy messages.
And those were just for me.
Yeah, they were, and I got fed up of it.
I can't control myself. But the point of this story, Lauren, is I know a lot of people who listen to this show don't necessarily follow our Facebook page. But we had a nice little argument going on the Facebook page with some people about what the proper food is for Easter, which, of course, I say is ham. Easter is for ham, not for lamb.
It's lamb.
But did you see what Tim wrote? Barbecued ribs. He made barbecued ribs for Easter. Now, that might be a new tradition.
It is. I had lamb for Easter Sunday.
Of course you did. You're in Wales. Ham is for Easter.
We should ask your friends.
Did you eat a lot?
Pardon?
Hello? I said, did you eat? Yeah, did you eat a lot over the over Easter?
No.
I did. I ate a ton. I'm as big as a whale, Lauren. Big as a whale.
Okay.
Speaking of which, Do you know how to get two whales in a car?
I don't know.
Well, first you start in England and then you drive west. No.
No. We should have somebody come on and give us a theology lesson behind the correct meat to eat at Easter.
I've already done it. Okay. For Easter it's ham. For Christmas it's tahi. Thanksgiving it's tahi. Christmas could also be pizza. Pizza's really good anytime. Yeah, that's it.
We have a pizza in the UK that is a burger pizza, and it has pickles on it, and it is nice.
Burgers and pickles and hot dogs, that's 4th of July, Lauren. That's 4th of July.
But on a pizza, it was very good after my lumbar puncture. I have to admit, I did treat myself to a Domino's pizza after my lumbar puncture. So I wasn't allowed to.
Don't you?
Pardon?
Ugh, pineapple on pizza. People put pineapple on pizza. Ugh.
Hawaiian.
It's gross. Although, you know what else is Hawaiian? And I love it. Spam.
Have you seen the Python Spam sketch?
Oh, yeah. And I actually saw, Spam-a-Lot, the musical.
Oh, I want to see that.
But I'm a Spam addict. I don't know why. I don't think I'd ever eaten Spam in my life, but when they first shut down for COVID, they told everybody to go and buy a bunch of canned foods because you never know when you're going to leave your house again. You know, I bought a bunch of cans of Spam figuring, oh, if we're trapped here for a year, I got food. And then a month later, they're like, yeah, you can go to the grocery store. And I'm like, fuck, I got all these cans of Spam. What the hell am I going to do with it? So I looked up all these recipes, and I have become like a total Spam addict. Lauren, it's delicious, but Sarah hates it.
It is weird. I will say that. I mean, it is a bit weird. I don't dislike it. And it's just weird. You have to have a key to open it.
No, not in America. It's got a pull tab at the top now. No more key.
I don't know if we still have the key, but I remember when my grandmother used to buy it. We used to have a key. It just seems so fiddly. A food.
Oh, it's delicious. You fry it up. It's really good. I don't even have to be, really hungry to eat it. No, I mean, I got to be hungry to eat it because you don't eat when you're not hungry, but I don't have to be like, I'm starving. I have nothing in my cupboard but Spam. I love it. I'll eat it whenever. And ladies and gentlemen, we are not sponsored by or endorsed by Spam. Please do not think we are. Just like we are not. We are not sponsored by the Bathroom Buddy. We are not sponsored by the Bathroom Buddy, or we are not sponsored by Duff's. These are just things that I like and I'm talking about. But. I could eat Spam anytime. Hey, Lauren?
Yes?
You ever find yourself, when you're halfway through eating a horse and you think to yourself, guess I wasn't as hungry as I thought? You don't get it? No, I don't think you got that one, did you?
No.
See, it's an American expression, I'm so hungry I could eat a horse. But since you
actually... Yeah, I know.
But you guys do eat horses over there.
No, we don't.
I thought you did.
No.
The French do.
Yeah, but we don't.
Yeah. You don't eat ham either, Lauren. You said the only ham you have is for sandwiches.
No, we have ham. We have ham as well, ham bones.
Like a big old ass of ham, put it on the table, carve it up and like gnaw on it.
Yeah. And gammon as well. Gammon is very nice. But not at Easter. It's lamb at Easter. Or barbecue ribs if you have the weather.
Me and Sarah found a wonderful way to make barbecued ribs in the oven, and they taste just like they're grilled. It's amazing. I'll have Sarah tell you the recipe sometime. Really good. Do you like beef ribs or pork ribs?
Either. Either is good.
Yeah, they are. You getting hungry, Lauren?
No, it's 9:45 at night here, so I am not getting hungry.
You've already eaten, haven't you?
I have, yes.
Oh, Lauren, that's disgusting.
Oh, Brian, don't start that. Come on.
Oh.
I stopped it.
Okay, do you want a cute joke?
No, I don't want any more jokes.
Well, it's a cute one, Lauren. Hey, Lauren.
Yes.
What did the capital O say to the capital Q?
OQ?
No, it said, ew, that's disgusting. Put that thing away.
Right.
it looked like a ding ding.
I get it. It's just not funny.
Oh, it's funny. You really didn't think that's funny?
No.
All right, let me try one more then, Lauren.
Okay.
So, dog walks into a bar that's across the street from this construction site. Says, strolls up to the bar, says to the bartender, give me a beer. Bartender says, whoa, a talking dog. You should get a job at the circus or something. And the dog says, why, do they need bricklayers there? Nothing, huh?
No.
Okay, Lauren, your turn. Tell me a joke.
I don't know many jokes.
Well, all I know is that, did you know, do you have like a mirror in front of you, or like can you pull up something on your phone that looks like a mirror? Because this is true, and everybody listening at home should follow along and try this. When you say the word poop, your mouth actually makes the shape of a butthole. Same is true when you say the same is true when you say the words explosive diarrhea. Oh, I dropped my microphone. Not even in like a drop in the mic way.
Are you 12?
No. Although I'm pretty sure 12-year-olds all find explosive diarrhea fucking funny. Anyway, we're going to have to move along with the show, Lauren, but because we got the third and final part of our mystery series of The Strange, the Weird, and the Wild with Tim Schwartz and Kurt Konecki. You know, we talked about the Philadelphia Experiment, and then we talked about the Montauk Project. Now we're going to talk about part three, which is... As funny as the first two are, the third part, MK Ultra, might be the most terrifying of all of them. Because a lot of it is...
Unfortunately, I couldn't be...
What's that?
I couldn't make it to this part, and I'm very sorry that I couldn't.
No, but you will love when you hear it, because unlike the first two, which are kind of funny and goofy, MK Ultra is actually terrifying because you don't know what's true and what's not anymore. It's not as wacky and crazy as the other ones, but it's scary. But before we go on to that scary, scary business, why don't I give us
today in history?
How was that, Lauren?
That was very good.
Yeah, I thought that was a good one. Well, I have a really cool day in history. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Today in history, which is April 2nd, in 1877, the first recorded human cannonball made their debut. Her name was Rose Matilda Richter. She went by the stage name of Zazzle, and she was the first human cannonball at the Royal Aquarium in London. And get this, Lauren, she was only 14 years old. You fucking Brits loved that child labor shit back then so much that you even threw a 14-year-old in a cannon and shot her across an aquarium.
Well, you know how teenagers can be.
I do. And I kind of wanted to throw that in there as almost a teaser for next week's show, which might have something to do with circuses and show business in a way, but that's just a little teaser. I'm so excited for next week, Lauren, and not about the fucking eclipse. I don't give a shit.
I've not forgotten.
What's that?
I've not forgotten what's happening next week.
No, I'm so excited. But anyway, that's my day in history. Zazzle, she got shot out of a cannon in London at the age of 14. Rosa Matilda Richter. Those of us who are fans in history of circuses and sideshows, so she should be a name that's more well known, because the human cannonball is something that's still used all over the world to this day. She was the first 14-year-old pioneer. What you got for me, Lauren?
So my day in history is the 2nd of April, 1801. The British, led by Horatio Nelson, destroy the Danish fleet in the naval battle of Copenhagen against Napoleon.
Okay, first off, you know, only you people name people Horatio. I don't know any Americans named Horatio.
It's a good name, Brian. It's a good name.
It's like if I had a kid named him Horatio, I know they'd just be calling him whore in school. That would be his nickname. But
it's a good name for a cat.
It is a good name for a cat. I'm not as good as Cleocatra or Billy Van.
I think if I had a cat, it would.
What year was this that he kicked the shit out of Napoleon?
1801.
That's 1801. That's actually a pretty significant defeat for Napoleon, isn't it?
Yes.
And he had to go back, tail between his legs, and say, I just got my ass kicked by Horatio.
I know.
How do you sound cool saying that? Hey, who kicked your ass there, son? Horatio.
He said it in French as well, which made it a little bit cooler.
Yeah, La Horatio.
Horatio.
Horatiolio. I have another. This isn't so much a big day in history, but you're a film buff. I'm a film buff. Do you know?
Yes.
Two legendary films came out April 2nd in history. In 1954 was the first viewing ever of Ed Wood's first movie, Glenn or Glenda, although at the time it was still known as I Changed My Sex. That premiered in San Francisco, 1954. And do you know what movie premiered April 2nd, 1968? First off, Lauren, I'm a big Ed Wood fan. I know you're a big Ed Wood fan, but I'm joking about how that movie changed film forever. However, the film that came out April 2nd, 1968, did change movies forever. Do you know what movie that was, Lauren?
Oh.
2001, A Space Odyssey. Was actually released today in history in 1968. taking science fiction into a serious realm, away from being, you know, matinee films or drive-in films. It was a genre to be taken seriously pretty much for the first time. And that's thanks to Stanley Kubrick. You don't seem impressed. You're like, fuck 2001.
That's a good film.
Who wants that many Dalmatians? Wrong film, Lauren. Had nothing to do with Dalmatians. You are rolling your eyes at me hardcore now, aren't you?
Yes.
Now, when you said it's a good film, are you talking about Glen or Glenda or 2001?
Oh, both. Glen or Glenda. Glen or Glenda is amazing.
I love that movie, and it's so bashed to this day, but there's something very sweet and charming about how impassioned it was about showing tolerance. And I mean, you know, we talk about a time now where transsexuals and transvestites are treated with absolute intolerance in society. You know, it was even worse in 1954, where it was illegal in a lot of places. And here this guy, maybe incompetent, no budget, but it was such an impassioned plea for understanding and compassion for these people, because he was one of them, of course. But
I think that film, Edward is telling you who he is in that film. It's him coming out.
Oh, absolutely. And it really is. There's a naivete, not only because he was not a very talented filmmaker. I don't want to say he was a bad filmmaker. He just didn't have the technical skills, especially then. It was his first film. But there's heart to it. It's not someone going through the motions. There's actually, his heart and soul is in that film. And Lugosi, as rough shape as he was, and as old as he was, and as bad as the dialogue was, he still gives 100%, 110% Lugosi gives in that film. He's all in on it. And I don't understand the weird bondage scene in the middle of it with the whips and the burlesque show. I'm sure the distributor spliced that in to add sex because it was playing at exploitation houses. But overall, I love that movie. And now it didn't make me want to go out and buy an Angora sweater, but I do love that movie. And I love 2001. In fact, you know what I might do tonight, Lauren? I might watch
2001.
I might watch a double feature of Glen or Glenda and 2001. How about that for a fucked up double bill?
That would be amazing double bill. I would pay money to see that double bill.
I think it would. Yeah. Oh, I think that's what I'm going to do tonight, Lauren. But you know what I'm going to do today? I'm going to fire up the magic interview box.
It's the magic interview box.
Because I am excited to bring this third and final chapter of this saga to the listeners and to you, Lauren, because this is going to be your first time hearing it, too. And I can't thank Tim and Kurt enough. They gave us 3 weeks of their time. They came on to do a three-part episode. And this was intended to be one episode, Lauren, but there was so much and so involved that, you know, those guys are so great that they agreed to keep coming back. And of course, they said they'd only come back the third time if Lauren took those fucking sheep out of her house and went away.
I was in church. Maundy Thursday.
I know. We don't really think they blew you off, Lauren. It was. We knew you were busy. But I do want to warn people. There's some pretty disturbing stuff in it. So, you know, you might get a little frightened or paranoid or entertained, but yeah, we're gonna now talk about the history of MK Ultra and what's true, what's not true, who knows what's true. But what do you say we go to that, Lauren? You want to flip the switch?
Yes, I will.
All right, here we go, folks. And judging by the name of this episode, you can tell we're still staying with the weird, the wild, and the wacky, because this episode is called Part 3, All That and LSD 2. So we are going to bring back our dear friends, Kurt and Tim, who y'all are familiar with by now if you've been listening the past few weeks. And I'm sure if you listen to this part, no one says, you know what, I think I'm going to start with part three. And then, except for Star Wars. You know, they start with four.
Right. Good point.
Or good Leonard, point. Part six. Well, you're not allowed to make Bill Cosby jokes anymore.
No, no.
What's in that drink, Kurt?
LSD. I figured I'd get in shape for the episode. No, it's just jolly good soda.
I do have to say, since I total stream of consciousness, since we mentioned Bill Cosby in a derogatory way, I used to work, my first job, I worked concerts, and I was a guitar technician and a stage crew person for a concert venue. The second nastiest person I've ever met in my entire life was Bill Cosby.
I've heard a really? Lot, not, other yeah. than the drugging people stuff, I've heard a lot of like bad things about him.
You know, he didn't drug me, so maybe I'm a little hurt that he didn't find me attractive.
I'm obsessed with going on Reddit and looking at the threads about people who have met celebrities and which ones are nice and which ones aren't nice.
Oh, I've been asked by several people to write a book about it, but I got some stories I could tell you off camera.
I'm sure.
Although I did once get in a fist fight with an R&B legend. So
really?
Yes, a deceased R&B legend. But I was in an actual fist fight with him. Yeah.
I'm curious to hear this story.
So you say deceased. So what? You took him out?
Yeah, he died about 20 years after the fight, but
it probably just took a while to catch up to him.
It did, I'm sure. It was Luther Vandross.
Wow.
Oh, wow, yeah.
But long story, fun story. Maybe another show will be about that. But this show, before we get into it, this is a couple, what do you call it when house cleaning shit?
Housekeeping is what we call ours.
Yep. My house, you know. Yep. So, housekeeping. Do you two guys know how much I love you guys?
We love you too.
I just want you to know, this is how much I love you guys.
All right.
For the sake of the audience, we are recording this Thursday afternoon, 4 p.m., on March 28th. Do you know what else is happening at 4 p.m., Thursday afternoon, March 28th?
Does it involve chicken wings?
It involves the first fucking Yankees game of the season.
Oh.
I am talking to you two during the first Yankees game of the season. That shows how much I love you guys.
Wow. I am touched.
Yeah.
I mean, not I don't love you wholeheartedly because the TV is on in the background and volume is just, but I love you enough to mute it. So
That's something.
And
that is. And
Kurt, I think you've developed quite the stalker from being on our show.
Oh, boy.
Because for the second week in a row, I got an email from a listener saying, oh, my God, Kurt sounds just like the sexy guy from Fargo.
I just don't know who the sexy guy from Fargo is. What's his Steve Buscemi?
I don't either. But apparently,
unless it's the TV show, because I've never watched a Fargo TV show.
You know, it might be the TV show because I'm not thinking you don't sound like Steve Buscemi. Wasn't he the sexy guy in the Fargo movie? He got in the wood chipper, right?
I think he was the wood chipper guy. I need to find out who this sexy Fargo guy is because I need to embrace this because I love that somebody actually said that.
You look just like him, too, I'm sure. Theater of the mind on a podcast.
I'm sure I do.
That's right.
Yeah,
well, thank you, listener. Thank you for thinking that I sound like the sexy guy from Fargo.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
Yeah. sent from Attica State Penitentiary.
That's right.
I
we love your voice, man.
I feel like my accent isn't that bad, but when we're doing our podcast, I know every now and then I slip into D's and Do's instead of these and those. So,
well, it's funny because when I told you when the first one came in that he sounds like the sexy guy from Fargo, I'm like, I never put the Dakota's accent on you. Yeah. And then I'm like, I kind of do hear it now.
A lot of people say we sound Canadian or like from Fargo, like the characters from Fargo. Well,
that's what I get a lot is when people say, you're from New York, you don't sound like you're a New Yorker, you sound like a Canadian. And I'm like, well, I'm on the Canadian border. I'm eight hours from New York City. I'm 15 minutes from Canada.
Yep.
But yeah, and I don't realize how it's funny. Every once in a while, I'll listen to the show while editing, and I realize, oh my God, I do have a thick accent. That Western New York accent is thick. And then there's Tim. Complete middle of the road, no accent.
Yep. Sounds perfect.
Yeah. Tim could be reading newscasts in any state.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. You don't have any accents here in Southern Indiana, so.
But that's what we got. Kurt's the sexy guy from Fargo. Yankees and the Astros are playing right now, but I'm talking to you. And we are taking a psychedelic journey past the Philadelphia Experiment, past the Montauk Project, into the inevitable MK Ultra, which to me sounds like one of those, not modern day like Dragon Ball Z Japanese cartoons, but like an 80s Japanese cartoon, like Voltron or something. MK Ultra. Doesn't it?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yes, but MK Ultra, bad guys, the bad guys fighting G.I. Joe, you know. They yell their name as they're attacking.
MK Ultra! MK Ultra! Wait a second, I got to do it right. MK Ultra!
Ooh, I like that.
That sounded like a Mortal Kombat finishing move or something like that.
Yeah, it did.
So this one freaks me out, I think, the most of the three. Because, as we discussed in the first two episodes, spoiler alert, motherfuckers, if you haven't listened to part one and two, you should. Because it'll be spoiled. Sorry to call my audience motherfuckers. That was rude, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was. It's a term of endearment. We pretty much, I think general consensus was Philadelphia Experiment. They were doing some tests, but most of the stories we're hearing are poop. Correct?
Correct. Correct.
Montauk, even more so. Yeah, there was a base. There was some tests going on, but Junior didn't really come out of the fucking walls. Somehow this leads into MK Ultra. And the scary thing about this one is for all the conspiracy theories, and there are some really wacky things to go with this, a lot of this might be true.
Mm-hmm. And some of it is. I think this is like the other two in that people think that it's more than it is.
Well, I think they think it's more than it is, but we do know because of unsealed documents, even into the 2000s. We do know through the Ford administration when things were released that some of these things were true. And that's kind of scary in and of itself.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's as nefarious as some people do. I think some of the things that were done were, but I don't think they were meant to be that way.
Oh, no. I disagree. It was... All of this is about as nefarious. I mean, if you want to think of your worst James Bond villain and the stuff that they would come up with, this is what MK Ultra and all the other satellite projects around it were.
All right, Tim's going to get us all killed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, yeah, definitely. Definitely. You know, this. Stuff that, I mean, it'll just blow your mind what they were working on.
Now, let's start on a little happier note. What what was the initial intent of this project, Tim?
Well, I don't know if you'd want to call it a happier moment, because the original intent was the knowledge that Nazi Germany had been experimenting on captured slaves, gypsies, gay and lesbians, you know, anybody that they managed to capture at some of these concentration camps, there were these nefarious experiments going on to see first of all, what was going on in people's brains? So, I mean, they were doing things like, you know, cutting people's heads open while they were awake, you know, poking electrodes into them to see, you know, what parts of the brain, and then going on from using drugs, hypnotism, and all kinds of attempts to see how the human brain and mind can be controlled. So the United States and the Soviet Union, China as well, were very well aware of what was going on with this, and so started their own programs as well. The United States probably was also influenced by the Korean War and the stories that were coming back from prisoners of war on how the North Koreans were using various torture tactics, things like that, in an attempt to you've heard of the book and the movie The Manchurian Candidate. Well, that came from these true stories coming back from North Korean POWs on attempts to do just that. It sounds crazy, but there were attempts using hypnotism and drugs by the North Koreans and probably the Chinese as well to try to create a Manchurian candidate, not to come back and, you know, try to shoot the president, but looking more along becoming like, say, like double agents and things like that.
Making a Manchurian candidate. Am I the only one who thinks that the original is far superior to the remake of that?
The original
movie?
Is so good. Angela Lansbury in there is amazing.
Oh, but the remake kind of.
I didn't see the remake.
Meh. Yeah.
Meh.
But the original, I think it's because it's black and white, you know, and the scene with the flower shop where it looks like old ladies there. And that's just a classic movie.
And with the, yep. with the possible exception of Man with the Golden Arm, probably Sinatra's best performance. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I musically think so. Or acting. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's that yep. good. Anyway. Continue. I just wanted to throw that in. My movie dirt came out.
So around 1953 is when officially the director of the CIA, Alan Dulles, created MKUltra, though there had been a program before that called Artichoke. That was the one that was based on the information coming in not only from Nazi Germany and Japan, but also North Korea.
And with Nazi Germany doing this with Operation Paperclip, we had a lot of their scientists come exactly. over that had experience with this. So they knew
right.
kind of.
As did the Soviets and the yeah. British.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Though unfortunately, well, it's hard to say, fortunately or unfortunately, you know, some of the infamous, most infamous ones managed to escape and live the rest of their lives in South America. Joseph Mengele, especially, who I guess was very, very predominant in tearing people's brains apart to see what made them tick.
Yeah, when my ex-girlfriend moved away, she left one of her books here, and it was all about the experiments that they did in the concentration yeah. camps. And holy cow, it was just – I can take a lot, but that was almost just too much. I think I put it down and never picked it up again because it was just mind-boggling.
It's brutal. It is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the thing about it is that legally these intelligence groups in the United States would not have been allowed to use any of this information at the time that had been captured from the Germans. You know, there were laws put into place to prevent any of that from happening, from working with former Nazis. And of course, you know, Operation Paperclip threw all that out the window. And it's just like, we'll just sneak these guys in and work with mm-hmm. them. And, you know, the hell with the law. But MKUltra, their original ideas were to use various methods for interrogation. That was the whole original point of MK Ultra was, how can we get information out of people without killing them, basically? So they started using experiments using, sodium pentothal, truth serum. That was one of the first things that they ever used in test operations with sodium pentothal. And despite what you see on television and the movies, it's not that effective. You know, I think it's called a hypnotic. There are various other drugs called hypnotics, but just supposedly, you know, put you in a very sleepy and suggestive state, you know, willing just to, you know, spill your guts to your now best friends out there talking to you. Then it progressed using some drugs that we're familiar with now, heroin, opium, marijuana, and LSD. LSD was a very recent, a mescaline as well. LSD was really kind of the new kid on the block, and not a lot was known about them, about this class of drugs. So there was an emphasis on LSD also because the CIA had a contract with the only laboratory in the world that made LSD, and that was Sandoz. And I think they were
Switzerland.
So all the LSD that the CIA bought, and they bought a ton of it. I remember reading at some point that the CIA had bought enough LSD to dose the entire planet, population of the planet, several times over.
Well, you know, as a guy who played in a lot of bands as a teenager, I know why, and I'm not an LSD person. Believe it or not, I've never done LSD. I know I'm going to sound so square to everybody listening now. I've never taken LSD, but I know a lot of people who did. And I think they might have outbought the government with what they were spending on it.
So LSD really became the main thing that MK Ultra was interested in studying. And, you know, there were other programs as well. Don't forget, MK Ultra was just one of a number of other different MKs, you know, MK Dreadnought, and, you know, things like that. Each one was
MK Dreadnought!
Each one was given a specific task to research. So, you know, like MK Ultra, it was mostly drugs, hypnotism, things like that for their research. But now where it gets really bizarre is that the powers that be, and of course with the CIA, all of these different projects were compartmentalized. So only this one section would know what they, you know, what was going on with these experiments. The rest of the CIA, nobody knew what was going on. So these guys decided, well, the only way that we can efficiently test this is just to go and dose unsuspecting people all over the place. And they started out with their colleagues at the CIA. They would go, and there was like a CIA Christmas party. Yeah, I think it was like 1954, 55, something like that, that they went and dosed all the drinks with LSD. And it's like, let's see what happens. And then, of course, we don't have the records, unfortunately, of how much they used. But again, this was pure, unadulterated LSD. And, you know, a little dab will do you.
I remember reading somewhere that they said at that time, if you worked at the CIA, you were basically going to get LSD put in your drink at some point.
Yep. And you never know when it was going to happen.
Nope.
Not trying to be a jerk, but can you imagine going to your CIA office Christmas party in 1954 and ended up at Woodstock?
Yeah. Well, that may have happened, you know, because with any kind of drug like this, you know, most people, I would say, you know, it if you don't know you're being dosed, it definitely would be a scary trip, but you'd get over it, you'd come out of it fine, no problems. LSD is not really known, despite all the propaganda, it's not really known as being a dangerous drug. You know, the only way that you're going to die from LSD is if you go and walk in front of a car, you know, do something stupid like that while you're high. But
well, you can fuck your brain up by taking a lot of it.
Oh, well, yeah, of course.
Like any drug. So we're not telling you people that it's
No. No. But now, see, people who have maybe underlying conditions, you know, OCDs, things like that, something like LSD can start a whole really horrible cascade effect, creating depression, suicidal thoughts, things like that. There, Kurt had mentioned before the start of the show, one person in the CIA who was dosed, and he ended up, it messed his life up, and he ended up plummeting out of a window. The controversy is whether or not he voluntarily
or had little assistance.
Yeah. Somebody showed him the way.
Not only that, but the unforeseen side effects that are so dangerous, like a sudden love of the Dave Matthews Band or Fish. I mean, these are dangerous things, kids.
But the CIA, I mean, they also did things where they went out and were dosing the population, the civilian population. They set up one operation in Seattle, I think it was Seattle, called Operation. Wait a minute, let me think. I remember how this goes. Operation Night Climax.
Midnight Climax.
Yeah, and they set up several brothels with cameras and two-way mirrors and things like that, and they would then dose the Johns who came in to visit their favorite ladies. And I guess kept them there till the trip wore off, just to see, you know, what would happen. And again, this was just one of many types of different operations that were going on all across not only the country, but in other countries as well. Because remember, the CIA legally is not supposed to have anything to do with the civilian population. They are only for international, you know, protect the United States from international enemies. You know, not our own population. Supposedly, they released I don't know if it was LSD, but there was some kind of hypnotic, hallucinogenic, or psychedelic, as they call it now, gas in various subways of New York City. The city of Fort Wayne, Indiana, it wasn't an LSD or, you know, a psychedelic type of drug. It was some other kind of, it was supposed to mimic poison gas that they had airplanes flying over New York releasing this gas. This was a little bit later. This was after the 1950s. And then they had sensors set up around the city to record how this gas dissipated over the city. Supposedly this was, you know, like a friendly inert type of gas that wouldn't hurt anybody. Later it was found out, and I can't remember what kind of gas that they used, that it probably, you know, wasn't the best if you had asthma, you know, or other kinds of breathing conditions. And I should also add that the whole anti-Vietnam War movement in the 1960s was probably taken down by the FBI and the CIA introducing drugs like LSD and MDMA, I think, was the other one, or to first the leaders, you know, like of the Yippie movement and, you know, some of these others, and then let it trickle down out into, you know, the rest of the subjects. Yeah. And, you know,
if you were going to bring this up, but there's a book called Chaos.
Yes.
It's Chaos, Charles Manson, the CIA and the Secret History of the 60s. And the book kind of hints that Charles Manson might have been either MK Ultra, involved in MK Ultra, or dispensing the LSD for the government. Yeah. It was an interesting book. It was a really good book.
You know, not necessarily. And again, I don't want to jump to definite answers because I don't know, but not necessarily for the government, but unwittingly for the government.
Yeah, I think it was more unwittingly than.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, Timothy Leary, I don't think, was working directly for the CIA, but he was a useful idiot for them.
It had to do with his parole officer, and it said that he should have been jailed or re-jailed multiple times, and they never did, and it was very fishy that they never did. It was an interesting book.
Yeah, well, I mean, and there is the suspicion that the anti-war movement was taken down. Through the use of drugs and the drugs that were early on, at least, that were circulating through everybody were very high quality, probably Sandoz, LSD. That was at least one way that they used the knowledge that they had developed in the 50s to, they actually brought it to use in the field and served a purpose. Now, you also have to remember, like I said before, MK Ultra was just one of many. And we only know, us researchers only had access to approximately 20,000 papers that were discovered, because in 1973, the director of the CIA, and hold on a minute, I had right now my mind is stuck on the guy who started it, which was
Gerald Dulles. Ford declassified it, or
no, not yet. In 1973, and I guess because of Watergate and the government panic that was going on there, CIA director Richard Helms ordered all MK Ultra files destroyed, which, again, that's a pretty illegal thing to do.
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Technically, go ahead. The CIA has special standing when it comes to legality, so it's technically not illegal. I mean, they have the right to do that. And I also, this is part of where it gets, to me, more in the conspiracy theory realm than the reality realm. I don't think it was just MK Ultra, the other MK projects that they were destroying.
Oh, no.
I think they were destroying everything.
Yep.
Which is what something like that would do at the point where there's going to be a government collapse, which people thought in 73 the government was going to collapse. CIA was like, okay, get rid of everything.
But fortunately, a cache of some 20,000 documents survived Helms' purge, as they'd been incorrectly stored in a financial records building and were discovered following an Freedom of Information Act request in 1977.
Whoever was the file clerk was tripping.
Probably could be.
Put it in the wrong place.
Unfortunately, though, they were incorrectly filed in the financial sector, because most of them dealt with finances. You know, the money going in and out of the MK Ultra and their satellite project. What they did reveal, though, was that the CIA had made use of numerous other facilities, universities, prisons, places like that, to conduct their experiments with medical facilities. There was one doctor by the name of Dr. Cameron. What was his last name there? Donald Cameron. And he was doing experiments in Canada, even though he was a citizen of the United States.
Is this the Montreal experiment?
Yes, yes. Yeah. And that's the one that we know about. So remember, if they, you know, if this guy and this facility was caught, there was probably another 10 that we'll never know about. Mm-hmm. But what he was doing is that he would take people like, say, a mother who was suffering from a postpartum depression. And he would tell, you know, her and the family that, okay, we've got this this new type of technique to try to cure your depression. Just, you know, sign your name here, and, you know, we'll make mommy feel all better. And then they would go and drug her into unconsciousness, and then inject her with LSD while she was unconscious, and keep them in a medically induced coma for several months, dosing them with LSD the entire time, just to see what would happen. You know, and yeah, children too, especially teenagers. Ones who would come in because they were depressed or rebellious, you know, the thing it is, and they would go and be put into medically induced comas. And then given LSD for, you know, weeks to a couple of months, you know.
And the results were Ken Russell movies.
Yeah.
I'm not. The Ken Russell is my favorite filmmaker of all time. Yeah, I'm just joking, folks.
Oh, well, watch Altered States.
Well, exactly. Altered States is a Ken Russell film. And yes. I think that's inspired by a lot of this.
It is. It is. Absolutely. Deprivation tanks were a part of MK Ultra experiment. Probably. Which, go ahead.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to bring that up later, that deprivation tanks were a big part of this psychological, I don't want to say torture, psychological manipulation. Mm-hmm. And now it's a trendy thing for people to pay money to go and do.
Yep. Right.
My girlfriend goes and does it every couple months.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? It's fucking warped.
Well, yeah, but I mean, when you're floating around for 30 minutes, it's relaxing and enjoyable.
I showed her Altered States.
If you're in there for, yeah, you know, if you're dosed with a bunch of LSD and then stuck in it for a week, it's probably not as pleasant.
No. Depending on the music playing.
Oh, God.
I'm just saying, you know.
I remember reading that they would play, I don't know if it was trippy music, but they would play like these recordings of the same phrase over and over and over again. And it was just like any movie where somebody gets brainwashed. That's kind of what it was like.
I like to think it's the tunnel scene in the original Willy Wonka.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I kind of picture it being like.
Yeah.
With that poem constantly repeating in your ear.
Oh, God. Yeah. That's a nightmare.
I mean, okay. This is fucked up. And what's really fucked up is this was going on, like you said, we know it was going on in the Soviet Union. We know it was going on in China. We know it was going on in England. We're pretty sure it was going on in France. We're pretty sure it was going on in Israel. And yet we only know this little bit of what was going on here. What fucking crazy shit was going on in the rest of the world? I don't even think I want to know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And part of it also is that they came to really understand the workings of the human mind and how it could be manipulated using not so very pleasant techniques. The ones, you know, like the dosing of LSD and the deprivation tanks. I mean, all of these things, like I said earlier, that you've seen on James Bond movies, probably somebody had done an experiment along those very same lines to some poor schmuck. Yeah.
It's scary shit.
That the game's distracting you there, Brian. I can tell.
Well, yeah. sorry, we're down 3-0, and then you know, hit to advance the runner to second. So, it's scary shit to think that. And this is going to sound horrible, and I'm going to sound like the ultimate like sellout here, but there was some good that comes out of this kind of experimentation. Not that it's meant to be, but that's what bothers me most, is that people will justify, well, look at the good we discovered that came out of this. does it outweigh the bad?
Well, I imagine that some of the current lot of antidepressant drugs that we have now probably evolved from the drugs that were discovered through the various satellite arms of MKUltra, because as early as the 1960s, there were discoveries being made by all of these institutes that were being paid by the CIA to do this kind of research, as well as electronic methods. Now, this is where it really starts to sound bizarre, because they had pretty much discovered all that they were going to discover using LSD. By the end of the 1950s, they pretty much knew how most people were going to react to certain doses of LSD and what can and cannot be done. Because, again, they were hoping that they could use LSD, dose somebody, and then interrogate them, get all the information out of them, and then maybe wipe out their memory and send them back. There was also this dream that they could create, say, like a silent assassins, like what we were talking about with the Manchurian Candidate. Could you hypnotize or drug somebody to develop an alternative personality that would go and kill somebody and then have no memory of it? And that was what you saw being developed in the end of the 1950s and into the early 1960s.
The Jason Bourne stuff.
Yes, yes.
Well, there's a lot of people that think, what was his name that shot RFK? Saran? There's a lot of people that think that's what was going on with him.
Right.
Whether it's true or not, I don't know, but there's some weird stuff there.
Well, and it's we do now know that it is possible to create dissociative personalities. I mean, the old name is split personalities, but those usually come about when children are abused, usually sexually, when they're very young, and then they develop a second personality to hide that pain. So there were, and it's distressing to think about and to talk about, but there were experiments being done where they would take children and abuse them, just to see, and probably injected them with LSD as well, just to see if they could create sub-personalities in them to do their bidding. And, according to some, that research ended up being successful, and that it was proven that it was possible to do that. And it's hard to say whether or not, some of these most extreme examples that have been put out there, like the Project Monarch, which was the arm of actually creating assassins and almost like the super soldiers type of things from ordinary citizens starting when they were kids.
Well, even the abuse stuff, I mean, we don't know exactly what's real and what's not there, because don't forget, those are the same things they said about the satanic cults of the 80s, mm-hmm. that they were doing the same thing to create. And it's, we don't know if that's true. Well, we're sure that's not true.
Yeah.
We just don't. And that's the problem with this, is because we don't know. People could speculate so much weirdness. But to me, the fact that we do know that, especially the psychological tests done on people in the 50s, that it takes it away from the whole Philadelphia experiment, Montauk Project, and into the realm of so bizarre that they're not even trying to spread disinformation about it.
Right.
That's what freaks me out, is that, you know, yeah, they were definitely doing some kind of tests with Philadelphia and Montauk, but they would spread disinformation to make people think it was wackier than it was. None of this stuff was supposed to get out.
Right. Exactly.
Now, there are videos, and you can see them. I think YouTube has some of them, of the LSD experiments they were doing at universities.
Yeah.
That was part of this. How they survived, right. I don't know. You'd think they would have been destroyed.
I think there's one of British soldiers that have been dosed, and one of them is like hanging in a tree laughing, and it's creepy watching those.
Have you ever seen the videos with the ones that were done in universities here?
Yeah, yeah.
Where like the guy who was the artist, and they had him drawing some stuff, and then they dosed him and had him drawing it again an hour later, and dosed him again and had him draw. Yep. I mean, how did these videos survive? That's what freaks me out. You'd think those would be destroyed before some time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, and there were probably a lot more that did get destroyed. You know, these are the few that, I mean, they're, you know, fortunately, people being the way they are, you know, there's always going to be information that falls through the cracks and gets discovered after the purges.
Now, there was some benefits that came out of this. For instance, Pet Sounds. if not for LSD, we would not have the greatest album ever recorded. And all joking aside, if not for a drug like LSD, someone like Brian Wilson probably would have killed himself in his 20s because of his schizophrenia and his all his problems. It was self-medication, and it kept him alive.
Mm-hmm. And like, that's baffling. Hallucinogenics are kind of big again with ayahuasca tea, people drinking like the ayahuasca and stuff like that, that it's kind of like making a resurgence right now.
That's
people microdosing.
I'm glad you brought that up. You're so good at this, Kurt, because that's another thing I was going to bring up. How much of this do you think that the CIA or KGB or the M6 or whatever, M6. Or M5 at the time, how much of it do you think was inspired by the natives, the Lakotas with the peace pipe, the Chalupa, or with the peyote of the other
the vision natives. Quests.
Vision quests. How much do you think was inspired by that for these projects?
I'm sure that, it played some part.
Yeah, that I don't know. I don't know really if there was, at least with the original people who started it all, whether there was any awareness of you know, the older indigenous practices. I think it was just more along the lines of, you know, what can we use to pull the information out of our prisoners?
Mm-hmm. And I got to take it into the realm of the weirdness now.
You're going to talk about gang stalking?
Well, no, that's a whole nother story. A lot of people claim that MKUltra led to the Swan experiments, the psychokinetic research, the ESP research, telekinesis. Do you think these were offshoots of MKUltra, or do you think it was something completely different?
That's a really some good of them question.
Were. Yeah, some of them were. The remote viewing was, I would say, was definitely a part of the MK Ultra, because there was also a part of this where they had gotten rumors from the Soviet Union that they had psychics who had the ability to stop people's hearts from a distance, like the man who stares at goats situation.
And they had the videos of the woman who could perform all these things. And it was the KGB fucking with us. They were messing with us, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people say that's proven. Other people say it's proven as disinformation. But I think they knew, American spies are going to get this. Let's send them some shit to make it think it's legit, and they'll spend a ton of money for nothing.
The Soviet Union, though, very big believers in mental powers, and have done research, legitimate research on their end for a number of years. While you're right, I mean, there were films that got released to the United States that were definitely, you know, propaganda, but the Soviet Union was very interested in trying to develop, you know, remote viewing and also various forms of telekinesis, like we talked about. You know, would it be possible to kill somebody from a distance using just your mind? So there definitely was a branch of MK Ultra that was doing that very same kind of research, again, part of then the remote viewing projects.
So basically, okay, Kurt, you stare real hard at Tim to make his heart stop.
It's like scanners, like the movie Scanners.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to say, it makes me think of Scanners, you know.
The second best exploding head in film history is Scanners, by the way, so.
All right. Are you going to say the first is Maniac?
Oh, Maniac is third, but it's my Maniac's third, but it's really good because it was the first Tom Savini head explosion, and it was his own head.
Yep.
Which makes it classic. But I actually believe the Chris McElroy head explosion in the movie Scare Package that I always promote, even though it was done completely comedically, is the best exploding head I've ever seen in a film.
I watched that movie again the other day. I kind of like that movie. I really do.
Scare Package? It's wonderful.
Yes.
But the exploding head in One Time in the Woods, where he just throws the rock from like 100 yards away and the head explodes, it's perfect. But Maniac's a really good one, too. Why do I know this much about these things?
I don't know.
It was Tom Savini blowing up his own head. Scanners was that.
Yes.
That's what it was. You know, I had Chris McElroy on the show one time, Kurt, and I told him that it was up among the three best exploding heads in film history, and he almost cried. Said it was the nicest thing anybody had ever said to him.
Aww.
But I can't believe I was just mentioned with Maniac and Scanners in the same sentence.
There's a movie from the 80s. It's not a long these lines, but it's the guy can go into people's dreams. I think it was called Dreamscape.
Yeah, Dreamscape. That's one.
That was a good movie. I always associate that with Scanners for some reason.
With Dennis Quaid?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Dennis Quaid, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's funny because a lot of people don't realize things like certain elements of Nightmare on Elm Street come from Dreamscape. Certain elements of Avatar directly come from Dreamscape. You know, the movie had some much more profound impact on other films than people don't realize it, because that film wasn't as big a hit.
Yeah.
Good film, though. Actually, I got to watch that again. I haven't seen it in probably 20 years.
Well, Inception is probably a direct descendant.
Yeah.
From Dreamscape.
Yeah. And Altered States is another one.
Yeah.
That, you know, I don't think enough people remember Altered States.
Was Debbie Harry in Altered States? No. Or am I thinking of a different movie?
Yeah.
You're probably thinking Videodrome. You're thinking of Videodrome.
Yep. Right. I was thinking of Videodrome.
Which is also fun.
Never seen it.
Well, and, you should watch that.
Yeah.
That's an excellent
Debbie movie. Harry from the 70s. Oof. That she is one of my big crushes.
Well, you see, Videodrome plays right into some of the supposed wings of MK Ultra, the use of electromagnetic signals, radio signals, what have you,
and sexual torture.
Sexual torture, right. But it has to, it had to be with like the electromagnetic frequencies as well. That was the next line of research with MK Ultra, the arms. MK Ultra officially ended in 1973, which really means that they changed the name to something else.
Exactly.
And no, continued it's because on 1974 along came Brian, and I put a stop to it all.
Stop that. You stop that now.
Okay. So yeah, now on to the next phase you were going to go, Tim. What became of this?
Well, there was somewhat of an in-between stage where there was research being done on whether or not you could put, say, like an implant in a person's brain and control them from that. And that was especially farmed out to other countries, where these doctors would take, a lot of times it would be young adults, and would put electrodes in their brains, and just to see if then they could send radio frequencies and influence these people one way or the other. Either by making them think that the voices being transmitted were their own thoughts and influence them that way, or even the, God told me to type of influence.
Another good movie, by the way. Yeah. But I don't know if this qualifies, but what is so different from that than EST? Electroshock therapy, which is still done.
Oh, yeah. Well, electroshock therapy is can be extremely beneficial. I mean,
exactly.
We've been, you've seen the movies like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and things like that, where you think that they're used to torture patients, but it's not. It's kind of like a reboot, so to speak, of the human brain. And it's been proven time again that it's extremely beneficial, especially when drugs don't work. I'm sounding like an advocate for electroshock therapy.
I was going to say, you could not pay me enough to do that.
I've been in buildings where it happens.
You're put out. Usually, you're supposed to be put under sedatives and put out. And it's not like a huge amount of current either. It just takes a small amount.
A little dab will do you. Just like
a little dab, yeah. Yeah, it's funny because I was just reading about this in an article just the other day. And that's why, it's like it's fresh on my memory.
Now, do you think I know a topic that Kurt and I have discussed privately and you've done on your show, that the booms, the sky booms, could be part of this testing, that we're fucking with an entire town or community of people by having these loud booms in the sky that no one can explain? The ones I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, there's the booms, and then there's the weird trumpet noises. Like the trumpet-like or noises.
Screeching metal noises.
Yeah. Only if it was done, I think, for psychological influence. People like, what the fuck is that noise, and panicking. Because you don't need to do something like that, because it's been shown that radio frequencies can be very efficient at influencing a population.
It influenced everyone on Gilligan's Island when his fillings started picking up the radio signals. Remember
that's
that?
Right. That's right.
Uh-huh. See the kind of influence it can have. Do you know how disturbing it is when you work with a bunch of people who are 30 and under and none of them know what Gilligan's Island is?
That's sad.
Oh, that's sad.
That is.
Yeah. That's life now. They don't even know what it is. They have access to more information than we ever had in our entire lives.
And they don't watch Gilligan's Island.
They don't watch Gilligan's Island. Right, right. Well, that's why doing a show like this is important, because a lot of people are starting to forget about the whole MKUltra and the mind manipulation. And so, you know, you get these stories that are coming out now about the Havana syndrome, which, you know, first started out with people saying, well, you know, we think it's some kind of audio device that because people were saying that they were hearing like buzzing and clicking noises before they fell down with the symptoms. And as soon as I start myself, because of previous books that I've written on this subject, as soon as I heard this, I was like, no. These are electromagnetic weapons, EM devices that are that have been specifically developed.
How is the CIA not coming, like, you know, giving you a little pat on the back, Tim?
Oh yeah, pat on the back, right? You know, what's that little red dot you see?
Yeah. How is that not happening?
Well, because I'm not the only one. You know, I mean, there's plenty of other people besides myself talking and writing about this kind of thing. Yeah. Because the information that we currently have is just a minute amount that has, you know, that was destroyed in 1973. You know, and we wouldn't have even have known about this if it wasn't for just those 20,000 documents, which not all of them have been declassified.
No, but it did tell you how much acid cost at that time.
Yeah, that's right.
And how they are ripping off all those stoned hippies. I hate to quote Bill Maher. I really do, but I got to give him credit for the line. You know, I'm not saying I'm necessarily pro drugs, but it certainly didn't hurt my record collection. And again, you know, how much of the 60s obsession with LSD was intentional?
I wish I could remember the quote, but there was something to do with they realized what a great public pacification device it was, and then TV came out, you know, so they didn't need it anymore.
What's a bigger way to test a billion people at once, make it known the Beatles have tried it?
No.
You know, and then everyone's going to want to do it. Everyone in San Francisco, go to the Grateful Dead party. We're all going to trip. You tell me that wouldn't be the ultimate way for the government to say, we're going to observe some shit without them knowing it. I mean, it's perfect.
Yeah. Well, and the thing about it is, you know, by that time, it was fully recognized that drugs such as LSD and MDA and some of the other hallucinogenics, not cocaine, did have a pacifying effect. Despite the propaganda, you know, that was going out that, you know, that these drugs would make you pick up an axe and immediately murder your family and all your neighbors. Okay, you know, they knew it was just the opposite.
One more time. Okay. Fuck you, Tim. I love you, but don't you dare shit on Dragnet 1967.
Just the facts. Just the facts.
You know, it's funny. Did you ever watch the 50s version of Dragnet?
Oh, sure.
I mean, they were dark, hard-hitting stories that were like actual police crime stories, you know? Like, there was one from the early 50s where these two little girls are kidnapped, and they catch the guy who's molested and murdered them.
Nice.
And this is on in the 50s. Mm-hmm. You know, Dragnet was a dark police drama. Then it comes back in the 60s, and it's all right, this guy's got half his face painted yellow and half his face painted blue, and he's got his head buried in the ground because he's taken LSD. And if you take LSD, it's going to lead to marijuana.
And then for marijuana, get the axe out and kill your family.
Yeah, the one guy did, remember? He was trying to rob him so he could buy more marijuana, and he hacked him apart.
Or stick your baby in the oven. And
yeah, put your baby in the oven. That was the big LSD one. I mean,
Blue Boy was my favorite because he was half painted yellow and half blue, and he was burying his head in the ground like an ostrich. And then they found him dead, the comatose, because he won too many trips. One trip that went too far. You know? I digress. I am never going to bash Jack Webb on the show, and if you do, you're banned for life.
No, Jack Webb also had an interest in UFOs. Big time interest, yeah. And even he had a whole
collections in the world.
Yep. Yeah, he had a whole UFO show back in 1979, I think, 78, 79.
Was that the show UFO?
Yeah, Project UFO or something like that.
Yeah. Which I think every episode is available on YouTube to watch. Project UFO. Wow, I haven't watched that show in years. Now, so MK Ultra goes away. Bye-bye. We know it's replaced with something. We know none of us are naive enough to not think that experiments are being done all the time in all the nations of the world. So we know this stuff is happening. And it's happening everywhere. It's happening in Russia. It's happening in Germany. It's happening in America. It's happening in Canada. It's happening in Japan. It's happening in China. It's happening in France. It's happening in England. You know, why don't we hear more about it, you think? You'd think some of it would slip out.
Well, some of it has. The whole Havana syndrome.
Yeah, that's true.
Is what slipped out, and the United States intelligence are very well aware. You know what is going on. And more than likely, it is this is being done by Russian agents. Because the first ones happened in Cuba at a time when the United States was trying to develop better relations with Cuba.
Another question I have is the U.S. intelligence is so good that one thing we discovered when the Soviet Union fell and it collapsed and everything, not everything, but so much came public knowledge that we were light years ahead of them on technology that we thought we were behind them on because the secrecy was so good. And then it turned out, no, we knew we were that far because our intelligence knew everything they had hidden.
Right.
That the reason we allowed the Cold War to go on was financial reasons, but we were never really scared because we're like, seriously, we're way ahead of them in all this technology. And our intelligence knew that. They knew that about all the other nuclear nations. Our intelligence knows what's going on in these other places. Do you think that they're just stealing some of their experiments and data? Or do you think they're just one-upping everything they see?
Well, when it comes to say like the MK Ultra stuff, it was probably a situation where they may have discovered, say like at the time the Soviet Union was advancing on certain techniques that we hadn't thought about yet, and one of those techniques was the was using electromagnetic and microwaves as. And as science fiction-y as this sounds, there is truth in this, you know, in concentrated beams to influence, manipulate people, or just make them extremely uncomfortable, which is what the whole Havana syndrome is. And, you know, our intelligence knew exactly what was going on right from the very beginning and has just let everything kind of roll because, and you know, a little influence on their part as well. Now the stories are coming out. Well, it's probably just some form of mass hysteria.
All right. Havana syndrome?
Yes.
And then they said it was insects. They said it was caused by insects.
No, it was caused by swamp gas.
Oh, yeah. Or Chinese lanterns.
Chinese lanterns. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, that all of these people reporting these symptoms, a lot of them not knowing that other people were reporting these symptoms. But no, it's mass hysteria. You know, there was a report that came out just a couple of weeks ago because some of the research done on some of the victims haven't found a brain damage. That, you know, they're thinking that, well, if this was some kind of radiation weapon, electromagnetic radiation weapon, it would have, and from the symptoms that they were reporting, it probably would have left some kind of physical damage, which hasn't been found. So if this physical damage hasn't been found, obviously they are, you know, mass hallucination.
So here's where I got to take it in the direction that's going to make you both roll your eyes, especially Kurt, because he always rolls his eyes at me. We talked about how wacky and wild Philadelphia and Montauk were, and that MKUltra was scarier because so much of it was based in reality. But there is some absolute cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs shit about this that we know is just wacky bullshit. What's your favorite one of those that, you know, that was it the reptiles have anything to do with it? Did the lizard people have anything to do with it? What's your favorite one? Satan came down and did it. You ever heard any of those?
You want to go first, Kurt?
No, I'm trying to think of one. I'm trying to think of a crazy one. I can't really think of one. If you got one,
well,
go.
Okay, you brought it up at the very beginning of the show, which I think is kind of crazy.
Which one?
Gang stalking.
Oh, gang stalking is nuts. But that is supposed to be
some kind of intelligence operation.
Yeah, and there's a subreddit for gang stalking that I check out every now and then, and it's crazy. But then there's been other times that people have posted videos they took with their phone of being supposedly gang stalked, and there was some hinky stuff going on there. I was like, okay, I could kind of see why they would think that. Explain. But, you know, it's like, okay, gang stalking is the idea that there is it's like a concentrated effort by a group to harass you for whatever reason. And involved in that is something called street theater. You know, like when I go, I use this example on our podcast, on the Strange Sessions, that I was upset one morning because I went to Quick Trip and I wanted to get a ham and cheese bagel. And as soon as I went to go get it, a guy walked up and grabbed the last one and walked away. Where I'm thinking that's just my crappy luck, but somebody that's into gang stalking would say that they did that on purpose to inconvenience them. Mm-hmm. That's what street theater is all these people around you working in tandem for some covert operation just to harass you.
Sounds like the mentality of the MAGA people.
Yes, it does. But it's crazy. But then there's stuff like I don't remember where it was. I don't even know if it actually happened. But I've read a lot of stories about, for some movie, there was a billboard somewhere, and they had some kind of sound technology in there that when you were walking on the sidewalk under the sign, at one certain point, you would hear like whispering in your ear, and it was it was directed sound from the billboard. And it's like, if somebody's kind of unhinged and they hear somebody whispering in their ear, there's nobody there, that's going to set them off. So that stuff exists. I mean, that stuff, you know.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. And that was something that was developed with the research of MKUltra. That highly concentrated beam of sound, which is now being used in advertising.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what about, is it true that a lot of people believe subliminal messaging came from MKUltra?
I was actually going to bring that up earlier when you asked if we still do MKUltra, and I said I think some of it gets filtered out into different topics, and I think subliminal messages is one of those topics that's a more subtle version of mind control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but most studies have proven that it really doesn't work.
No. But then I heard other studies that do. I was just reading something about it because I'm fascinated by subliminal messages. I'm fascinated by the idea of it. And I was just reading something that's like some study says that the best subliminal message to use on somebody is the phrase "Mommy and I are one." That's like the best phrase to use as a subliminal message, because it has something to do with wanting to be back in the womb and stuff like that. So it's crazy, you know, but I back in the day, there was I shouldn't even tell the story. Back in the day, there was a bookstore here in town, like a used bookstore, and they had old copies of Playboy and Hustler and stuff. And I would legitimately go in there to look at those because I loved the old 70s advertisements with the subliminal. Yeah, with the subliminal mess.
The ads, like the car ads.
There's some, like, I've found some like weird stuff. You know, I remember when I worked at the grocery store, I think they just came out with cheddar and sour cream ruffles. And I was sitting there one day on break, just zoning out. And I happened to look at the package, and clear as day, I saw the word sex on the potato chip. And I showed it to somebody, and they're like, oh my God, they're like, I can totally see that too. So I don't think it happens like people think, you know. I don't think that the ad agencies are out to manipulate people, but I do think that, you know, for a while back in the day, it was like a popular thing to have like the cassette tapes that would play like relaxing beach music, and it would have subliminal messages.
Well, they still do that.
They still do.
But you got to remember, there was a time period where advertisers did think it worked.
And I think that, like, was the 70s. Said, that's why I love
late 60s, like, early 70s.
There's some crazy ones like
liquor ads. You'll find them a lot in liquor ads. Like the Ice Cubes will have like a naked woman in it
There's an old Benson and Hedges, I think, ad where there's two hockey players fighting on the ground. And clear as day, if you look at the ad, one of the hockey gloves that's supposed to say Cooper, because that was a brand name of hockey gloves. Yep. It says clear as day. It says cancer. And the idea is that from what I've read in these books is that we have self-destructive impulses, so we know that that's going to give us cancer possibly. So putting that word on there subliminally makes you buy it. It's just like, it's so fascinating, and I don't buy a lot of the ad stuff. And I think, like you said, it was put in there just because people thought, hey, maybe this will work. But I don't think it necessarily works. But when you get into like the using the audio cassette tapes that have subliminal messages, you have to ask yourself how much that actually influences you. And it's like you said, studies kind of show it doesn't really do much of anything.
And that will lead into the backwards masking, the secret subliminal messages on albums that are there. You can prove there are certain ones that are there.
Yeah, but there's a difference between ones. There's a difference between intentional ones that they did in the studio and like the one where the Queen one that supposedly says it's fun to smoke marijuana.
Which is there.
It's there, but it wasn't intentional. No.
You hear it because you think that's what you're supposed to hear. Led Zeppelin is not saying, I wish up, say, you should do.
Yeah.
However. Like
the intentional ones were the Beatles, probably because of the LSD, you know.
Bebop Deluxe had an intentional one that starts out backwards. You play it backwards and it says, automatic destruction will now commence on my mother planet. You know, Weird Al had the one that was on his album intentionally that said, the devil eats cheese whiz.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, stuff like that. But like, you know, the lawsuits against Iron Maiden for
Judas Priest
for so that every Nike ad is a victim too.
No, I love that what's his name? Judas Priest.
Rob Halford.
I wanted to say Rob Thomas, but that's a totally different band. Rob Halford said, like, during the trial, he's like, look, if we would put subliminal messages in there, it would be to buy more of our albums, not for our listener base to kill themselves.
Yeah, and supposedly you know? Yeah. Do it.
Yeah.
Do it. It could mean fuck. But, you know, that's the weirdness about something like MKUltra, is that people who are conspiracy-minded will lead this into, well, they're responsible for subliminal messages. They're responsible for backwards messages on album. They're not. It's just, I mean, the subliminal messages might have been part of it, but, you know, drink more Coca-Cola every 100th frame in a movie is not going to make you drink more Coca-Cola. It doesn't work. And MKUltra would have realized it didn't work.
He even admitted that he falsified the results of that test. But by that time, everybody had bought into it so much that it became kind of a, you know, a thing.
I had a friend who had a book, and that's what it was. It was a collection of ads and pictures that, you know, supposedly showed these kind of subliminal messages, usually involving sex. And there was one that it was a plate of fried clams that supposedly looked like an orgy.
An orgy and, I mean, featuring bestiality.
Yeah. I mean, you really had to, look at it like that.
That book was called the Clam Plate Orgy by Wilson Brian Key. He wrote Subliminal Seduction. He wrote Media Manipulation. One of those. He's got a couple. I have all those books.
I wanted that book so bad. It's like, here, I will pay you cash if you no, he wouldn't sell it to me.
I'm fascinated by that, but at the same time, I don't necessarily think it works. But there's some.
Does he think it works? The guy who wrote the book.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. Wilson Brian Key is he actually testified at the Judas Priest trial about the subliminal messages.
So he's a.
But there are some ads in there that I can 100% I think are valid, that they're they're just trying to see if it works. Like the one that has sex in the three ice cubes is like clear as day once you see it, and it's fascinating. But
the clam plate orgy, I think you just got a dirty mind, you know?
Yeah.
The exactly. One where you supposedly the Marlboro wrapper, you could see the Klansman holding the banner in the three
I don't know if I ever saw. I always see ones about the camel.
Oh, the camel's got the guy with the erection. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Google search it now, that the Marlboro logo. Like, apparently, if you look between the legs of the horse and the lion, it looks like two Klansmen holding the Vidi Vidi Vici banner.
I'll have to look at that. But even back when I was younger, we had Joe Camel, and it wasn't until people said how much his mouth and nose look like a penis and testicles, and I'd never even thought about that till they said that. And I'm like, oh my God, it does. You know?
You know, I was a lifelong cigarette smoker, and it wasn't because I saw camel cock. Just saying. You're looking at the Marlboro one?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a common one that I don't think it's intentionally there, but someone kind of saw it, you know, sort of like we see the brontosaurus in the clouds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, and there's ones like Wendy's. Like, a lot of people don't realize that the pattern on her collar says mom, M-O-M, because it's supposed to subliminally make you think of eating at home, like good home food.
I never had a home cooked meal that tastes like Wendy's. Thankfully. And I'm not bashing Wendy's. But
yeah, that is like a form of mind control. Whether or not it works, who knows? But that is a form, supposedly, of mind
control. But again, you can trace that back to the research that was done specifically in the 1950s from MK Ultra. So,
the difference is they probably realized there was nothing to it, so dropped it, stopped funding it, and other people picked it up and said, "Hey, let's run with this."
Yeah, well, I mean, even if it did have a slight influence for advertisers, you know, I mean, anything to get that little bit of an edge. But ultimately, for what MK Ultra and their satellite units were looking for, it wouldn't have been effective, you know, in anything that they were wanting to do, because that kind of research would have been, all right, could we subliminally implant advertisements in foreign cities and their magazines, newspapers, later on television and stuff, that would influence the population to say revolt, against the government.
Now you're moving into they live territory.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, where do you think they get it from?
Well, yeah.
You asked about the craziness of this, and there's I don't know how I feel about the idea of a Manchurian candidate where somebody is programmed to kill somebody, you know, like.
Hey, I saw Reggie Jackson try to assassinate the Queen of England.
You did.
Yeah, right.
You did.
And if you can get to Reggie, you can get to anybody.
That's true. But you know, like candy bar. Siron Siron is like an entire episode of its own.
That's an odd one.
The one. Oh my God, let me look it up.
There was the Russian one too. I can't remember his name. That apparently would assassinate people and then go to sleep.
Yeah.
Like wherever he was, he would just fall asleep. But when he wake up, he'd have no knowledge of it. You remember that one?
Okay, this is the one.
Vaguely.
Hang on here. This is the one that made me, because I was actually watching TV when this was going on, and I remember thinking that was really weird. Like, I don't know if you guys know about that. It was the early 2000s with the Washington D.C. sniper.
Yes, I remember that.
Right.
And I was watching this when that police chief Moose came on to do a press conference. And at the end of the press conference, he said, and I have it exactly here, he says, quote, "You have indicated that you want us to do and say certain things. You've asked us to say, we have caught the sniper like a duck in a noose. We understand that hearing us say this is important to you." And when he said that, I was like, I was like, if I was conspiracy minded to think that that was a trigger phrase for the sniper to shut down. Because it was shortly after that he was caught. But it was so weird. I remember thinking, I'm like, wow, that's like a trigger phrase that you would use with a Manchurian candidate to shut him. Yeah. Yeah. And there's if you look at the MKUltra stuff as far as a Manchurian candidate, there's supposedly a lot of programming involving Alice in Wonderland and the Wizard of Oz. Like, there's trigger phrases and trigger scenes and stuff that will turn your personality into your alter personality that's going to kill the guy. And it was just so weird. That's the one time that I was like, wow, I mean, that's kind of a weird thing for the guy to say at the police conference and then catch the guy shortly after.
You'd think they'd have chosen a different movie than Wizard of Oz. You'd think they would have chosen Psycho or something.
Yeah, but a Wizard of Oz, Alice in Wonderland, like all that stuff is supposedly... You know, but that's when you get into the idea of monarch and all that, which is just when you get into like sex slaves and all that stuff, which is just way out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do you guys ever see the movie Real Men with John Ritter and James Belushi?
Oh, yeah. That's an excellent movie.
You got to find that movie.
I don't think I've even heard of that.
You would.
Who are those clowns?
Yeah.
That's my favorite line in the whole movie.
The CIA clowns. They're a clown battalion. They all dress like clowns to blend in. And then John Ritter thinks he's a Russian double agent with the clowns. Kurt, it's about every conspiracy theory you can imagine being real.
I'll have to watch that.
You will. I think Tube has it for free right now.
Sweet. That sounds good.
And it's John Ritter is absolutely hilarious in it, and James Belushi is even better than John Ritter is in that movie. Takes a little while for the movie to get going, but once it does, holy shit. Anybody who loves conspiracy theories will fall in love with that movie.
I just don't conspiracy, you know, like all of a sudden now I'm reading about the bridge tragedy that just happened.
Disgusting that all these right media people came out and said all this racist and crazy shit. And
yeah.
It's a government setup, and it's a false flag. It's a fucking accident, you idiot!
Exactly.
You're trying to scare people for clicks and likes when you know nothing.
There was a time that I kind of liked being a little bit of a conspiracy theorist, but that time has come and gone. Like I just don't.
Because you can't identify with what those terms have become now.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a difference between being someone who's a conspiracy theorist because they think there might have been something to the JFK assassination other than a lone gunman and a QAnoner.
Yeah.
But today, if you say conspiracy theorist, people automatically assume, oh, you're a QAnoner. I'm a lifelong liberal who can't call myself a liberal anymore because what gets considered liberal now is so fucking wacky. That I'm like, please don't associate me with that.
Yep.
You know, labels change, but I know what you mean. I mean, Tim, you've had the conspiracy theory journal forever. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but it was never.
It was never what this is today.
No, no. Oh my God, no. And in fact, you know, I think I don't use it anymore. Twitter, the banner that I've got on my Twitter page, you know, it's like Conspiracy Journal, all the, what was it? All the fun stuff, nothing, none of that political crap.
that's good because
But imagine how many people would go to that site now thinking it's going to be, you know, Democrats drinking the blood of children because Satan tells them to. Oh, and you're like, that's not what this conspiracy theory. Or even when it started getting into like, we never went to space and the moon landing's fake and flat earth is now a big thing again.
The flat earth. Oh my God.
How that shows me that there is some kind of manipulation and mind control going on by government somewhere, because how they were able to use propaganda to make flat earth become a big deal again. That's gotta be a disinformation. That all you have to do is warp a couple brains and then they get into these groups that they're in their own bubble and it just blows up from there.
Like I've said on here, that was our one episode that we got a lot of grief for, because that was the one time that, you know, we generally treat stuff with respect, whether we believe it or not. But that was the one time that we didn't, that we just flat out called BS on everything.
And anybody who comes
at
you for that, you're going to be like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah. When they believe that a ship in the ocean goes to this side and then like Pac-Man just transports to this side.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, like Pac-Man going through the tunnel and then coming out on the other side.
Yeah, that part's true. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, but you know, I see these comments though. You know, I'm on Instagram quite a bit, and like the space travel channels and things like that, and people are, you know, putting on theirs like, oh well, we didn't go into space because there is no space. You go up to a certain height and you, I guess, you hit this glass ceiling or something.
Yeah,
the firmament. and somehow
the government is keeping this secret for people for some reason.
Like, back when we had the whole conspiracy that we didn't go to the moon, it was still kind of fun. I mean, it was still like fun to debate about, you know, but
this stuff now, the flat earth and the firmament, what it is, it was so easy to do because it's based on religious fundamentalism. And if you can plant that seed, because the Bible talks about the firmament and the Bible, you know, says the moon and the sun are the same size, even though we know it's not true now. But if you could start telling these religious people, hey, your Bible says this, so it's true, and it just blows up from there. It's a disinformation campaign meant to manipulate people. You can't convince me otherwise. If that makes me a conspiracy theorist, so be it. There's no other reason why out of nowhere a flat earth boom happened again. It hasn't happened in 10,000 years, but it happened again.
You got it too recently with the Kate Middleton stuff with the picture where where, you know, it was photoshopped or whatever. Then all of a sudden Prince William killed her, people were saying, and that she was dead.
And
I'm
going to jump on my film nerd high horse again. All right. This whole fucking Stanley Kubrick filmed the moon landing. No, because if Stanley Kubrick filmed that shit, he'd still be editing it.
Right. Exactly.
It took 10 years to edit a film. It took him 3 years to shoot a film and 5 years to edit it. Okay. It took him 6 years to make Barry fucking Lyndon. How long do you think it would take him to hoax the moon landing?
But
Barry,
you know,
Lyndon is an underrated film.
As far as conspiracies go, MK Ultra is grounded in legitimate experimentation. So
it has
a good foundation.
Well, not a good foundation.
Well, a foundation.
But that's it, though. I mean, you know, it's... And I don't want to be an apologist to some of these, you know, like the QAnon people, but they're able to use these actual things, these actual experiments that were being done with things like MK Ultra, and say, well, you know, if they did that, then it's not that crazy to say that JFK Jr. has been hiding, you know, hiding someplace, had faked his own death, and then is going to come back. You know, descend from the sky and save us.
The problem
from the
is that's 1 plus
Democrats.
1 equals 30.
Yes.
You know, that's the problem. You can't draw a logical conclusion with that line. They do.
They do.
You know, oh, if, you know, the if someone lied to me about this, then everything I've ever been told has been a lie. Mm-hmm. No.
But yeah,
One of the articles I read, it ended saying at the end of the day, like MKUltra was basically torture, trying to figure out a way to torture someone to get information from the person. That's basically manipulative torture
to get information and to get people to do what you want them to do.
Yep.
And I'll tell you this right now. This might make me sound like a horrible person. I'm kind of not so much against that. Every government's doing that. You kind of got to.
Yeah, but when you get to like the experiments they did on people that didn't know what was going on, you know, like Sidney Gottlieb, that was like,
that's different. That's the problem.
Yeah. You know, when they, yeah, because he was involved with the Frank Olson going out the window stuff, but people called him at the CIA behind his back, called him either the dark sorcerer or the poisoner in chief. And he was just a horrible guy from what I've read. You know, but again, you think you're doing it for the national interest. So,
well, that's my thing. If I'm in the CIA and I find it, holy shit, the Russians are doing all these weird experiments on people with drugs. We better see what's going on here, or they'll dominate us.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of see that. I'm not being an apologist or a defender, unlike Tim being an apologist for the QAnoners.
Yeah, don't even say that. Don't even say that in jest.
I am an apologist wholeheartedly for Judas Priest, though.
Yeah.
I'm an apologist for the Consuls.
The Consuls. Wow. You really just went there, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, my God.
Either them or the Archies.
Do you know that song was actually written for the Monkees and they said no fucking way?
Yeah. Yep. Bet they wish they took it.
No, they all said afterwards they're so glad they didn't.
Really?
It was towards the end of the Monkee Run when they really wanted to do all their own music, like the Headquarters album and the Head soundtrack. And they came in with that song, and I think it was Mike Nesmith who said, go fuck yourself. Yeah. You know, we're
saying that.
We know the show's not lasted forever. We want to be taken seriously as a band too, and you're trying to make us sing Sugar Sugar.
I'll die on the hill that they are one of the most underappreciated bands. I think, for song, I prefer them to the Beatles, actually. I really do. Like, I love the Monkees.
Really, even though I'm a huge Monkee fan, and I've seen them live in every way, shape, and form. I saw their first reunion tours when it was just the three of them. Then I saw it when it was just two of them. Then I saw it when it was all four briefly. And then I've seen three of them solo at times. Huge Monkees fan. Have every Monkees album. Love them. Love the show. And they did. Well, Mike Nesmith always was a songwriter. That's how he got the job. Peter Tork was a songwriter and musician. And they were good. When they finally were able to write their own stuff, the Headquarters and Head are the two best albums they ever did. And they wrote once. All right, we're nerds. We're sitting here defending the Monkees now. We're trying to talk about conspiracy theories, and the three of us are defending the Monkees. Who's your favorite Monkee, Kurt?
Mickey Dolenz.
And Tim.
Oh, Mike Nesmith.
Yeah, musically Mike Nesmith, comedy Mickey Dolenz.
But man, Lucy and Ramona and Sunset Sam, that song from Mike Nesmith. Oof. Yeah.
Yeah, I love his early videos from that period.
Oh, they were phenomenal.
Elephant parts.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. my wife is a big Monkees fan, so you know, I know a lot more about them than I probably should.
I think over here is my signed Head poster. I don't know if you can see
it. Ooh, very nice.
Yeah, I got this.
We got to see Mike Nesmith on, I think it was his last tour, you know, maybe about, what would that have been, about 5 years ago or so. So
we saw Davey and Mickey up at the casino, and it was actually really cool seeing them up there.
Yeah, I worked one Monkee show back when that job I had, I was telling you about, when I got in the fight with Luther Vandross.
beat up Luther Vandross.
I didn't beat him up. Okay.
And I know, but that's a phrase. That's a phrase you don't hear a whole lot.
No,
back when I beat up Luther Vandross.
What really bugs me is my brother says is when Luther Vandross whooped your ass, which is not what happened. What happened was we started John. He pushed. I was 17 at the time, by the way.
Oh God.
He shoved me. I lunged at him, and then it was broken up by about 10 people. So you didn't whip my ass, Kevin. Just saying that. Conspiracy theory out there that Luther Vandross whooped my ass and he didn't.
No, going back to mind control, like it's still used pretty much everywhere today. You know, like I just read a really, really cool article about grocery stores, how grocery stores manipulate you with the things that they do and the placement of things in the store. And it's like, wow. And the cereal, like the cereal mascots, like have their eyes looking downward to look at younger kids, you know, so it's fascinating.
In your local grocery stores. Now this might be something they do here that, in the produce section, there are certain of the fresh, non-packaged produce that it will be triggered when you walk by it, that a sprinkler will come down on it and light music will play.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's complete subliminal messaging.
Yeah. Some of our stores here play Singing in the Rain when it starts watering. Yes. And I read that it doesn't even technically need to really do that, but it makes the buyer feel more like it's fresh, I guess.
More like
I don't know.
The shit out of Patrick McGee. Yeah, I just made a Clockwork Orange joke.
That I have not seen. I have not seen a Clockwork Orange.
Oh, what the fuck?
Speaking of mind control with your eyes probably open.
He's never seen The Exorcist.
No.
He's never seen Clockwork Orange. He's never seen Altered States.
No. I saw Easy Rider. I thought Easy Rider was pretty decent. Yeah, speaking of LSD, going back to LSD.
Yeah, do you know who the chick he's doing LSD with is Tony Basil?
Yeah, yep. Yeah. Yep. Mickey.
Who was also in the Monkees movie Head.
Oh, that I did not know.
Yeah, remember the scene where Davey dances in the room that's black and he's in the white tux and he keeps slipping to white room, black room, white tux, fading back and forth? The woman he's dancing with is Tony Basil. That's a great movie. That's an LSD movie, too.
I love that movie.
Mm-hmm. Such a great soundtrack, too. Oh, such a great movie and soundtrack. My girlfriend's looking at me like I'm a fucking idiot right now. Okay, she confirmed she liked it. What about Altered States?
What Kirk was saying is that, you know, a lot of the manipulation using our psychology was for the capitalist system.
It became for the capitalist
system. You can trace that all back to the research done with MKUltra. It's a matter of fact now that, you know, we accept this stuff. As Kurt was saying, you know, when you enter a store, things are placed in a specific location to influence you buying them. Like you said, the cereals, the kids' mascots looking down on the children, all kinds of different things. Just our everyday life, you know. And our politicians use this same kind of mental manipulation as well. As somebody put it, you repeat a lie long enough, people are going to believe it after a while. And you see that time and time again.
I'm going to utter a sentence that I don't think either of you have ever heard these words put together in this way, but after I just learned what Kurt told me about grocers, fuck Toucan Sam.
No, not Toucan Sam.
Fuck him. The Trix rabbit can go eat a dick. Tony Tiger's okay, I guess.
What about Captain Crunch? Come on.
He cuts the roof of your mouth, so he gets a pass. Because he's putting LSD in there. He's like Sergeant Pepper. He's Captain Crunch. I don't know any other mascots. What are some others? Oh, the frog guy.
Dig'em?
Is that his name, Dig'em?
Dig'em, from what used to be Super Sugar Crunch, but then they had to change that. They had to change that.
Super Sugar Crisp.
Yeah.
Yeah, Super Sugar Crisp. But then they they had to sneak the word sugar out of there.
It always goes back to the Archies, doesn't it? Sugar, sugar.
It does. Oh, honey, it does. Honey. It does.
You are my candy boys, and you got me loving you.
Well, you know, you were talking earlier about messages, like terms being used to set people off. You're talking about the Washington snipers. Philip K. Dick wrote quite a bit about this in his Valis books and his other one. I can never pronounce it. It was more of like his diaries from this time period. But he was saying that the powers that be would use phrases on television, with commercials and television shows, that would be used as a trigger for, you know, whatever was going on. And one of the phrases was King Felix. And this was a term that, supposedly it was like, you know, you would never really hear that ever. And Dick said that one time that he was watching television and the two words on two separate commercials came on back to back immediately. King Felix.
I bet you he was like, wow.
Yeah, well, I mean, poor Dick. I mean, he was he had almost drugged himself into oblivion.
I was going to say Philip K. Dick was brilliant. And some of his books and short stories are some of the best you'll ever read. They've been adapted into some of the best things, do Android's Dream of Electric Sheep, for example, becoming Blade Runner. But he is one of those guys who burned his own mind out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and that's not, he wasn't an MK Ultra victim. He did it to himself.
But there was a lot of things that he talked about that seemed to have a direct correlation to the research that was being done. MK.
Yeah, he had an inside somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
He definitely did. I think there are certain people that did have insights into some of these things. I think some of the physicists from the time definitely had an inside into some of the experiments going on. I think a lot of scientists that weren't necessarily government scientists did have an insight, because you'll see references they would have made that reference it, especially in films they became technical advisors on. You'll see things happen. That's a little freaky.
I think Tim said last time, a lot of these experiments and stuff were like farmed out to colleges too. Like,
exactly.
A lot of colleges there. I was looking at one this morning, actually did this. It was about, like you said earlier, it was like a study on avian diseases, but it was done for the MK Ultra stuff. It was like the CIA funded that, as part of like how to, get a poison out there if they had to. So a lot of colleges were involved in this.
Oh, Harvard was big into, being financed by the CIA.
Yeah.
And didn't it turn out that a lot of the colleges that were studying parapsychology, were getting the funding from the CIA, that people didn't realize that that's where the funding was coming from?
Probably.
Yes.
Yeah. So, hey, some good came out of it. It gave us Ghostbusters. I'm going to have to wrap it here, though, because do you realize we went an hour and 45 minutes?
Wow. It's a fascinating topic. It really is.
It is. It is.
Plus, and I feel like we only touched the surface of it, too, because there's a lot there.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, I just love hanging with you two guys, man. It's so much fun.
Same. It's been a nice 3 weeks. It's been a nice three episodes.
Yeah, we're going to have to do more, because first off, the audience love it. I love it. And it's so much fun. And you guys, anytime we want to talk something weird or wild or wacky, I mean, there's no two better guys to go to. That's not me saying you guys are freaks. That's what I'm saying. You guys are really good at what you do.
Well, I admit it. I'm a freak. I fly my freak flag proudly.
I love the weird stuff. Remember, I'm the one that thinks we could be living in a computer simulation. If that's not freakish, I don't know what is.
Yeah. Do you really think that?
Sometimes, yeah. I really do.
Really?
I think, yeah. Yeah.
Well, then there's a really bad glitch, because look at how this is gray, this is brown, this is red. Explain that to me. And look at this. What the hell is this?
I don't know. I don't run the simulation. I just exist in it.
If it wasn't, if we lived in a simulation, I wouldn't need the bathroom buddy.
That's true. That is true. But yeah, I think it's a fascinating idea, a fascinating concept.
Well, Tim, Kurt, do you guys have anything you want to pitch? Anything you want to send out and tell people to go buy or listen to? Hint, hint, Kurt, Tim.
You can listen to our podcast, The Strange Sessions with Kurt and Krista. Coincidentally, because I was looking some of this stuff up, our next episode is going to be about MK Ultra. So we're going to do that. Cool. And as far as anything else, a lot of the conspiracy people on Reddit need to get out more and stop looking at a screen all the time.
And Kurt, you are more than welcome and permitted to use any clips from this show in your MK Ultra episode if you want.
Okay. But
remember, I have a potty mouth, so you may have to edit.
Oh, there'll be too much bleeping. I ain't got time.
There's
to
a lot of bleeping. Kurt's show is like PG.
Yeah, it is.
Fuck the
nothing but bleeps.
Yeah.
But no, I couldn't even.
Like our last episode, I had to hide the word orgasm. I had to like couch that differently so that younger viewers. Because we talked about Wisconsin, and it's every time we do a strange states episode, we do weird laws from that state. And Wisconsin has a law that when you are having sex with your partner, you cannot fire a gun while they are having an orgasm. So we're trying to think how that became.
How the fuck is anybody going to get laid in Wisconsin?
I don't know, but you cannot fire a gun while your partner's having an orgasm.
Speaking of which, you might want to report this on your show, Strange Laws. There are two strange laws from my hometown that I just found out about. Well, one I've known for a long time, but one I just found out about. You can tell this on the Strange Sessions.
Okay.
In Buffalo, New York, it is illegal to give an elephant beer.
Yeah. Yep.
Which means someone gave an elephant beer.
Yeah.
Yep. The other law that is still on the books here, and I want people to start enforcing this shit, it is illegal for any business not to have a spittoon. Still on the books. If you have a business in Buffalo, it needs a spittoon.
You need to get a clipboard and start going into businesses and being like, where's your spittoon?
Where's your spittoon?
But the only place I ever go other than my apartment is my cigar shop, and they actually have one, so. Oh. Tim, what about you? You want to promote the Paracast?
Oh, sure. Well, yeah, I'm co-host with Gene Steinberg on the Paracast, and you can listen to that on a lot of AM radio stations across the country, as well as most of your favorite streaming platforms. And of course, you can find all of my books on Amazon.com. Just type in my name, Tim R. Swartz, and they'll all come tumbling out for your reading pleasure, both print and ebooks.
And there is a new book in the works, I understand.
That's right. That's right. We're in the final stages of putting together a book about the mysteries of time and space. And Kurt, by the way, has an excellent chapter in this book.
Thank you.
I'm still trying to come up with a catchy title, though, you know, because a book like this, you know, it embraces a number of different subjects, going all the way from, you know, like the mythology of time, you know, the ancient gods that were supposedly control it, you know, up to modern perceptions in science about what time and space actually is, and then all the cool stuff, the reports of people, you know, just getting getting totally, you know, fucked up by time slips and weird stuff like that.
I know a title for your book. I'll tell you as soon as we're done recording, because I don't want it to go out in the air. But I appreciate you guys both for coming on. We're going to have to do more episodes because it's always a blast. So from Indiana and Wisconsin, this is Brian and Buffalo without Lauren from Swansea saying good night.
Good night.
Good night.
There are no slugs in our garden anymore. So yay, hedgehog.
Yay, hedgehog.